Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
I knew this was breaking news for the front page of the New York Times.
My gosh.
We need to accept that we are not alone in the universe.
The federal government, all these years, has covered up everything. It's very, very bad for our country.
There have been visitation, crashed craft, material recovered.
It was not anything from this earth. All I could do is keep a mouth shut.
The public has a right to know.
There's a tremendous resistance.
I guarantee every one of them knows that this event happened.
Hiding these dark secrets even from elected presidents.
They came running up here in such a panic. Child can't make that up.
Declassified government documents confirm ongoing UFO incursions at nuclear weapons sites.
Are you saying that there's some evidence that still hasn't seen the light of day?
I'm saying most of it hasn't seen the light of day.
These things are real. They're here. This is happening now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. As always, my name is Andy, and this is episode 20 of That UFO Podcast. There have been 43 or 44 releases of the show and roundtables, bonus episodes, you know, different things like that. But this is episode 20 of the show. And I do have a rather special guest with me on the show. I never told him this was episode 20 before we started recording, but I thought it'd be nice to share it with him that episode 20, Dan, or as you may know him, at The Signal on Twitter. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here for episode 20.
I know episode 20, just a few days short of the sixth anniversary of the podcast. Yeah, so
that's gone by fast.
It has. And for those who don't know, Dan was my very first review of the podcast on iTunes, was it, I believe?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, if you go back to the iTunes reviews, it was the first, and of course, it was a 5-star review, so thanks. And if you haven't and are listening to this right now, please go and leave a review for the podcast. That would be appreciated. But yeah, so Dan was one of the first people to review the podcast. And then through getting in touch with each other on Twitter and going back and forward, we've since done a load of these. We've been involved in the roundtable discussion that will be coming up hopefully soon, or will be involved in that. A little thing called UAP Media that we'll be discussing soon too on this show that some of you have heard a little bit about as well, which has all been, I mean, it's not been deliberately mysterious, has it? We've just been a little bit careful in how much we've been going out with so far.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of want to get everything shipshape before revealing all, that's all.
Yes, and it's not just us. We're only half of UAP Media UK, as it's going to be known as well, but that's something we can definitely touch on as well. But yeah, so 20 episodes in of the main show, we're going to touch on a little bit of UFO news and then discuss the phenomenon, because I feel that's worthy of its own show anyway. And now it's been a few weeks since it was released, the dust has settled a little bit, it's probably a good time to discuss our, I want to say non-spoiler, but it's going to be non-spoilerific with a hint of a little bit of spoiler.
I'll try not to spoil anything.
Most of the spoilers will come from Dan. It's going to be Dan's fault if there's any spoilers. But by this point, if you're listening to this, listen to the first part of the show for the UFO news. And then if you've not watched The Phenomenon yet and don't want anything at all ruined, even though I'm guessing you've probably seen a lot of what we'll talk about online, then pause it, come back to it once you've watched it. But you can now rent The Phenomenon as well as purchase it, but we would recommend buying it or renting it, of course, not getting it by any other nefarious means, just to support James Fox and the crew that produced that. Right now, I believe as of recording, it was third, am I right, in the iTunes charts worldwide?
Yeah, I think so. I was really impressed as well. It's I think the last time I looked there was at 98, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes, which is outstanding. That's usually reserved for Pixar movies.
Yeah, and actually I've got an exclusive. The 2% that marked it down was Mick West.
Really?
No, it might have
you
been.
Had me.
I'm just joking. I doubt Mick listens
to this.
There's
probably a bird-based review, isn't there?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, so like you say, that's an amazing score as well. And we're going to get to that. But first, we're going to discuss a little bit of UFO news, which there's been quite a bit in October. It's the phenomenon being released itself is a big piece of news, and that's going to be the main section of the show. But first off, there was a little bit of coverage again on Tucker Carlson. Again, that's so difficult to say with a Scottish accent, particularly Glaswegian. But yeah, Tucker Carlson talking about the phenomenon back on its release. Again, Chris Mellon very much seems to be the face of TTSA these days when it comes to these media circuits. He's very good at talking on them too. And of course, James Fox was on there as well. Did you catch any of the media circuit James was doing?
I did, yeah. He's been getting a lot of coverage, actually. Tucker Carlson followed up, I think because of there's a particular quote in the film from Reed, which we'll talk about later. And a lot of the mainstream media were kind of following up, trying to get word from them whether it was a real quote, because it was quite a heavy thing for Harry Reid to say.
Nuclear. So again, Tucker Carlson seems to have the UFO bug, particularly the last kind of year or so. And as much as people in the US have their favorite news networks, that's not really something that's, I don't think, is quite common outside the US, is it? That the political parties have networks they prefer over others. It doesn't, I know there's bits of that in the UK, but it's not as prominent here for any US listeners. That
I guess most of our media in the UK is owned by, I think it's something like 80% of the media is owned by, I think, the Murdoch empire.
Yeah.
We only really see that.
Yeah, we've got like the BBC or we've got Sky News. Sky, of course, is now owned by Comcast, so it's not under that umbrella anymore. But we kind of have those two news channels, don't we? And they pretty much share the same sort of views, and we don't have that big fight here between, you know, people aren't as passionate about politics here as they are in the US. I say that there's things in the news at the minute which we won't go into because it's not a politics podcast. But yeah, we don't really have that, so it's nice to see Fox over in America making a big deal of the phenomenon, talking about it, advertising it on a really high profile show as well. And someone like Tucker seems to really enjoy the conversation. And as we talked about, and as Tucker talked about, like we do, why aren't people taking this more serious? Again, I think just now that the election is literally on the horizon. And I tweeted this the other day and people agreed and disagreed, but I think the UAP subject is sort of ticking along in the background more at the minute when it comes to that kind of mainstream exposure. And the phenomenons came out at an interesting time, but I suppose you could argue, has it been the best time for it to come out with what's on the horizon? But yeah, that's something we can talk about within the body of the show anyway, but it's nice to see.
It's a good point to make, actually, because it was meant to have a cinema release.
Yeah.
So I imagine there would have been a bit more, you know, fanfare, and people could have gone to see it for, you know, $3-4, $3-4, you know, wherever you are, euros. So there would have been a bigger general audience and a bigger conversation outside of the community.
That's it. Everyone's kind of stuck at home reviewing. Journalists are at home. And again, if it's not front and center of the top 10 in your newsfeed, then it's probably not going to get picked up on by the most of the general public at the moment because of circumstances and COVID. But that's why it's so important that, you know, I'm going on for my show. I'd love to people to go on and review, especially on iTunes, as algorithms, and it pushes things up the charts and just gets out to a broader audience. But James Fox and The Phenomenon are no different. They want you to go on to any platform you can, but again, iTunes being the big one, leave a 5-star review. Rotten Tomatoes, leave a tomato review, as it's known, the tomato meter. It's go on and talk about it, retweet, like it, share it, share your thoughts on various social media platforms, and it gets people talking. And being on Fox News is no small feat. As we know, they've picked up a lot of the stories for TTSA over the last few years, and it's something they're not quickly getting rid of, which is really good to see from our point of view as well. On the converse of that, or on the flip side, the UK has decided, the government, that they're going to bury another load of UFO files for a further 50 years. That takes me up to my 85th birthday. Woo. So again, and this is what really annoys me, and this is where we're going to bring up, like we talked about UAP Media UK, and we will do that in a second, but there's a total lack of any serious UK UAP UFO coverage. But what's interesting is, as we'll see from people like yourself, Dan, huge in UAP activism, if you want to call it that, on the forefront of writing to MPs, writing to organisations, you know, just asking the questions of, do you have an interest in this? Do you have any information on this? Could you share this? What are your interests? And then, again, we'll mention someone who's part of UAP Media UK as well, Andreas Freeman-Stahl, as you'll know him on Twitter. He, again, is really heavily involved in this with the unidentified website that he's a massive part of as well. There seems to be no interest at all from a UK government, from UK authorities, from the mainstream in UFOs, yet they've buried another load of documents for 50 years. Why? That just seems totally, if there's nothing to it, then release what you've got. You know, that's really frustrating for me.
Well, there's two things struck me about it. One was that my MP, my local MP, when I spoke to him, he referred me to the upcoming document release and said, oh, you know, it's all, basically brushed me off and said, we're releasing stuff, you know, get off my back kind of thing. I had a few other responses from other people like that. And now, obviously, they've been delayed. So I get to get back to those people and kind of point out that, you know, their position was not a decent one to take. But then I did get in touch with the National Archives and speak to someone there about the release itself. And they told me it's because there are confidential details, basically, of the, I guess, the Calvin hikers and the other cases, other people involved in other cases, sorry. That they're not allowed to release, which is fair enough, but you can't help but feel that they're just kicking the ball further down the field for someone else to deal with. You know, have you seen the episode of Futurama where they send the garbage into space?
Yep.
And then it comes back like 50 years later and everyone's forgotten about it and it's someone else's problem? I feel like it's that.
That's the ball of garbage, and when I hit 85, it's going to be heading back towards Earth,
exactly.
To destroy everyone. No, but you're right, and that's the way it seems. It's just, let's just kick it down the line so it's someone else's problem, and if there's nothing to it, then, you know, or if just, it sounds to me like there's some redacting to be done there, which, you know, we've talked about many times before, but just blank out the details. We don't care necessarily about
people's
names.
I have the
redacted
and files.
Okay.
The last two releases were basically redacted, and the stuff they've got to release is the unredacted versions. And the last two releases were physical only, so you had to go to the archive and get them. And someone did. Massive thank you to them. They're available. I tweeted a link not too long ago. You have to register to a website. It had to be on a password-protected server. But they're there for you to read. But obviously, it's blacked out, so there's not much there to read.
And this is something we should talk about briefly now, and there's going to be an episode on this. The next roundtable that will come out is going to feature myself, yourself, Andreas Freeman-Stahl, and Dave Partridge of Shadows of Your Mind magazine. And collectively, we've put a group together, as we've noted or touched on a couple of times, UAP Media UK, with the goal that within the UK, we don't seem there are many serious voices or movement to talk about the UFO UAP subject in a serious manner. And even in the UK recently, there have been some people getting their stories out there, which again are just treated like a joke, and they aren't necessarily the sort of stories, and I'm not naming names or saying what those stories are just now. That's not my place to do that, but I don't feel it's the sort of stuff we want to be talking about on national radio that is going to push anything forward, because it's not the time or the place for it. And, you know, we can have a conversation with a little bit of humour, and I think you've got to be able to do it with a broad range of people as well. And I'm thinking one of the particular guests that were on one of the shows is on a massive UK talk sport radio station. And it's a kind of late night for any listeners abroad, kind of jocks or, you know, late night taxi drivers and kind of kooky characters. And they basically got a guest on and tore them apart. And they just wanted to make fun anyway. But you need to have someone on who can have a bit of a joke, know the level that they want to discuss this, but also push the conversation forward and bring up, you know, here's why this is a serious topic. Here's why we should be discussing it. Here's what's happening. And, you know, for all the issues that are going on, one thing the United States has been particularly good for in the last couple of years is the movements in UAP, particularly, as we know, down to Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon and co. But again, look at the phenomenon coming out, very much a US-based feature with a lot of its content, as we'll discuss. There's a lot to it that's happening from that country. Japan, obviously, very recently, having their defence minister, who doesn't believe in UFOs himself, mention that they're going to be reporting these more seriously and bringing it more to light from a Japanese point of view. That's great. What's the UK doing? When we're always seen as the US's little brother, I can't believe that there's not a group within the UK government that isn't looking at these, isn't studying these, that doesn't have an interest. As much as you want to talk about this being a very British approach and, you know, oh, what, how, you know, we have no interest in aliens and flying saucers and whatnot, and, you know, within the corridors of Westminster, I don't believe that there aren't groups within the UK government that are discussing these and are looking after these files and talking to the US, even of what's happened the last couple of years, the last couple of months, with the UAP task force potentially being launched and bringing out reports. There's got to be an interest in it, or at least some sort of contact back and forward. So UAP Media UK, from our point of view, and Dan will say some words on it as well, I'm sure, is going to be a group that can reach out to various organisations within the UK. And we're not saying that we want to put ourselves forward for interviews and TV shows, and that's not the point of it, but it's just if anyone wanted a point of contact, that anything was to be discussed, or they wanted to know who can they get in touch with to have a serious conversation, we'd be happy to do that and either do it ourselves or point these people in the right direction. Dan, what are your thoughts on what UAP Media is going to be?
I think you put it really well, actually. Yeah, basically a point of contact to separate the signal from the noise for people that want
the signal from the noise.
People. funnily enough, the Twitter handle comes from a film called The Signal that was made by the guy that made Tom DeLonge's Love movie. Mm. I'd recommend going to watch it. There's some pretty cool things in it. Sorry, what was the question again?
Yeah, just what is your favourite pizza topping? No, so just on UAP Media UK, like you've said, the objective is going to be, as a point of contact, is trying to collaborate together. Obviously, I've got the podcast. You've got yourself and Andreas from an activism point of view, and your knowledge between you is incredible, and the writing you do and the sources that you have as well. And then on top of that, you've got Dave with the magazine, which, again, Shadows of Your Mind, free content, incredible magazine.
Amazing magazine.
Yeah, please go out, and it's gaining a lot of traction as well. Get on the bandwagon now before Dave starts charging £5 a month for it. No, but you know, do you know what? There are far less superior content out there, Dr. Stephen Greer, that is chargeable than what Dave puts out there for free.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a thread running through it all. You know, Andreas is very public facing about social media activism. You're doing the podcast. Dave's got the magazine. And it's all about communication. And that's kind of very much the stage we're in with this disclosure movement. It's communicating the ideas to the right people at the right times.
And that's it. And do you know what? If there was a TTSA within the UK, I don't think we would even have to do this, or the idea would have even came up with it.
True.
But we just feel from a UK point of view, there's nothing. So again, if it's something that we can help from a British point of view, get anything out there and help media outlets report it more seriously, then great. If not, then it's something that we'll be kind of trying to do a very small bit ourselves on as well. But look for more of that. And Dan, do you have handy the details? Is it UAP Media UK, all one word, on Twitter?
All one word, same on Instagram. And then the website address should be about the same, but we'll post that when it's up and running.
Yeah. And again, I'll just say thanks publicly to Dan, Andreas and Dave for the amount of work they've all done on this already. I have the lightest of the load to do so far, and they're very good with not pushing me for stuff.
It's funny though, because I feel that way as well. So maybe we all feel that way.
I definitely have the least to do. So look forward to that coming out. And again, the roundtable number two, when we all get the time to sit down together, is going to be for UAP Media UK, and there'll be some kind of fun discussion in there with that as well. So I'll look forward to that definitely launching properly before the end of 2020. That'll be something coming out soon, folks. Another piece of UAP news, Lou Elizondo, who joined social media quite recently, reluctantly, as myself and Dan found out from one of our friends quite recently, has been doing some Q&As on Twitter. This isn't me whining that Lou still hasn't answered any of my fanboy questions yet. You know, I'm sure he'll get to one eventually. They're maybe just not that good. But many of you, especially listeners to this show, have noticed. Acom, I think, has had a few answered. Carl had one recently as well. Loads of you are getting your
UFOs
questions
as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, almost everyone except me, to be honest. So maybe I'm a little bit better. I haven't had one yet.
Maybe we're asking questions that are too hard. I asked him about his encounter, his experience that he alluded to in Unidentified. So
yeah, he's never answering that.
Yeah, that's not getting an answer on Twitter, is it? Come on.
No. Not
I've
yet.
I've got to ask, though.
Maybe that'll be the start of season three of Unidentified.
Maybe.
But yeah, so Lou's Q&As, Dan, what have your thoughts been so far on those?
His Q&As are really, really good. It's nice just to let him pick and choose what to respond to, because some of them are quite revealing. There was a few questions. I tweeted a few notable ones. One of them, War Servant at Sithinson 5, as a V, not a number 5, asked, you mentioned UAP pans useful for investigating. With equipment ready and in place, are naval ships being used as bait? Let's call it coincident deployment. And Lou's answers to that was, fantastic question. And unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to elaborate on this at this time, but keep asking this question. It's very important. That's kind of a huge point, that they might be using Navy vessels as bait. They have nuclear reactors, right?
They do. And I think particularly when you're saying, I mean, we're not seeing every single one of these strike groups that are out doing maneuvers and practices are being used as bait, but particularly in an area round about those Catalina Islands that seems so popular for UAP sightings and movement and activity, that maybe that was a subcategory, if you want to call it that, of why they were doing what they were doing. As we have heard on the roundtable done with Patrick Hughes, Kevin Day, and Gary Voorhees, it wasn't just the Navy who were watching the strike group. And when they were getting these contacts, which happened over a period of 7 to 10 days, there were other organizations on the coast who are tracking these objects, as we can kind of piece together, coming in from, let's just say, the atmosphere. Because can we say they're coming in from space? We don't 100% know that. We know they're coming from 80,000 feet or more. So they're coming from the atmosphere. Whether they're blipping in there or not, we don't know. They're then coming down to kind of sea level. And as far as we know, they're going under the water and somewhere.
somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. So again, yeah, are these strike groups deliberately being placed there to see if they can attract the attention of these things, which they seem to? And it sounds, and as again, I mean, I spoke to Chase Klitschko recently as well, that these events are happening like right now, last week, yesterday, a month ago. These events are still happening. And for a lot of us, we feel that might be the next, that would be a great push to get an incident like this being reported on Fox News or CNN, or I don't care what station it is. But last week, a strike group had an incident with a UAP. That would be great. That, for me, would be huge. And I don't think the next thing we're going to get is leaked footage of a legit, what we could call UFO, flying saucer, tic-tac, whatever. But it'd be great to see, even if it would be one of those bloody videos or a 5-second snippet of, here's what was happening last week that fighter jets encountered. Here's what we found off the coast of Italy, or here's what we found off the coast of Chile or Peru, anywhere like that where it's literally happening now. That for me would be a big step forward.
Yeah, I agree. It changes it when it feels a bit more immediate instead of, you know, 17 odd years ago. 17? No, I think I got that wrong. But yeah, I
you're about right. Yeah, 2004. So yeah, 16. Yeah.
See, I was wrong. it is a lot more immediate. We've heard of other cases, like the USS Boxer, but nothing that we can look at and go, you know what? Why don't you have HD video camera of that? You did that last week, and we've got all these gadgets and all this technology, and you've got all your very, very fancy radar that's even more impressive than was at the Nimitz site. Questions would be asked in a bit more of a passionate manner from unusual places, I think.
And for me, listen, we're not going to get anything in the next couple of weeks till the election's done and dusted. I think that's when we'll see a lot bit more movement on things. And for me, you know, I would love this to not be the case, but I don't think in 2020 we'll get too much more in the way of leaks and big news. Maybe something in December if it was going to be, but I think the election's going to dominate at least for another month, because as we're kind of hearing, the results might not be so clear cut or cut and dry. So it's, yeah, let's get that out of the way. Let's, people like ourselves and, you know, different magazines, podcasts, you know, we've just had Ryan Sprague has been in Coast to Coast, which is amazing for Ryan, someone that I've got quite friendly with as well and doing the podcast, and he's a really cool guy, and that's great for him. Stations like Coast to Coast, you've got Project Unity doing his work on his channel as well. We've got Jay, Dave, Shadows of Your Mind, Alejandro Rojas's stuff. There are a lot of podcasts out there, a lot of YouTube channels, a lot of outlets that you can keep up to date with news, and it's just keeping
just
going.
Chuck, it's redacted in there as well.
Oh,
the videos are outstanding.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to get it redacted on the show at some point as well. And what I have to mention, because I'll be speaking to him next week, is Undead Gaucho, who has a very good YouTube channel based over in Argentina, which apparently is only about a 3-hour time difference or something for me, so that's not too bad either. So yeah, looking forward to speaking with him as well. But yeah, there's a lot out there, and there's enough to keep the conversation going with a lot of different angles it's coming from as well. So keeping tabs of that one. And more pressingly, like, we want to talk about news that's happening right now or about to happen tomorrow night, Dan. There is going to be some NASA announcement on news about the moon. That sounds so vague and spurious now when I say it like that, doesn't it? There's going to be moon news.
Moon news. Yes. They figured out it's made of cheese.
Yes, which we have known for some time in the UK, yep.
In all seriousness, I think that it's probably something to do with water, ice.
But listen, before you even say that, Dan, I think it's worth you very briefly touching on it, because I don't think, just like myself, everyone will know all the details. How have they come about finding out this news about the moon? So basically, you were telling me how they've got a telescope up that high.
Yeah, sure. So obviously, when we have telescopes on the ground, we have things like clouds and atmospheric refraction that kind of mess up the image a little bit. So they put a telescope on top of a big plane and flew it up really high and used an infrared telescope to look at the moon. You know, sometimes the solutions to science problems are as simple as just chucking it on top of the plane and flying really high.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. It's a decent feat of engineering because they kind of got to, you know, obviously telescopes kind of stay still and this one doesn't because the plane would fall out of the sky, Midwest. So it looks at the moon and it takes an infrared image, basically. It's each pixel on the telescope, I think I've read it, is about 5 meter resolution. So it's definitely not going to be something like we found a being on the surface or, you know, anything like that. It's going to be from infrared readings where they can see materials, precious metals, water, things like that. So I'm expecting something along those lines.
Yeah, and I wondered as well, are we going to hear anything to tie in with the 2024 next manned mission to the moon, which just still seems so far away, doesn't it? Especially when we've got Elon Musk doing what he's doing over at SpaceX, you know, it just seems to be, why can't you just put some guys or girls up there like next week, you know? I'm sure you can't be short of volunteers, but maybe getting ready, maybe they've found some sort of area they can have a base from on the moon or... Not that there's not bases up there already, probably.
One of the more kind of edge theories I've looked at, obviously when the astronauts go to the moon, one of the issues is there's no atmosphere. And the post included a rock with a kind of trail behind it. And they think that maybe it's alluding to a wind or an atmospheric process on the moon. And kind of freezing water beneath the rock and blowing it along, which would be an interesting development.
Can you imagine one of the astronauts just went up and took the helmet off and were like, oh, actually, I can breathe up here? Actually, that is a wild conspiracy theory still, isn't it? That
will it be mad,
you
right?
You can breathe like in that, space, that would be no one's ever tried.
It's an inconsistent narrative over the course of our history. That's what that would be.
It would be huge, yeah. And I'm sure the astronauts on the space station would quite happily tell you straight away that no, you cannot breathe in space. And no, you cannot breathe on the moon.
Well, the atmosphere doesn't mean oxygen, you know. So no.
That is true. But yeah, so that's coming tomorrow, folks. So I say tomorrow, do you know what? This probably won't be out. Oh, unless I'm really, really good and Dan doesn't give me any more editing to do, then I could release this tomorrow for the moon news. So that news is coming tomorrow. Today, that news was last week. Hope you found it interesting. Just delete as applicable when you listen to this, folks. Okay. So yeah, so some more news which follows on from the Venus stuff as well. And there's been quite a bit recently. So it's been good to kind of touch on. What you're here for, though, folks, is the review of The Phenomenon. For my thoughts, for Dan's thoughts, more pressingly, because Dan has a lot more knowledge, he'll deny that, but he does than me on all these sorts of things. And we've got some of your questions as well that you're sent in and some of your thoughts too. Dan, I'm going to ask you for a really vague summary straight away at the start. The Phenomenon, what were your thoughts?
I absolutely loved it. I thought you could really see the effort that James has put into it. He's grown very technically as a filmmaker as well. And it was all on show. Tonally, very similar to Unidentified, I thought. It takes a very serious 60 minutes kind of approach. We have that really lovely, gravelly voiceover from Peter Coyote, almost like a cowboy around a campfire, I thought. I really enjoyed listening to him tell the story of the UFO history. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. How about you?
Yes. Oh, it's nice being asked a question on my own podcast. I like that. Yeah, that's nice. I loved it. Like you say, as people know, we're fans of Unidentified, huge fans of Unidentified. The tone was very similar. Something that always irks me, if I can use that word, of course I can, it's my podcast, so that irks me or annoys me on UFO documentaries, or I'll name them, and I love the stuff he does, but I find it a little too artistic. Jeremy Corbell, we've got the tone like you mentioned, we've got our Mickey Rourke in this as Peter Coyote, and I think it hits a nice tone that it's not off-putting and not trying to take over. We don't have long sprawling shots of the desert, and you know, kind of those wavy heat lines in the distance, and you know, artistic license everywhere. And I know you've got a background in cinematography and whatnot, and we'll touch on that. But for me, I'm watching this to hear about the phenomenon. I'm looking to see footage of UFOs. People talk about beings, multidimensional, alien, extraterrestrial, all of the above. That's what I want to see. I'm not particularly interested in exposition around it, but I get that's got its place as well. There's a little bit of filler and storytelling and narrative and moving things on. And I think sometimes that's where the Jeremy Corbell stuff for me, it can be a little bit, oh, okay, here's another 45 seconds till we get to the next scene to get to what I actually want to hear about. Is he just padding this out for time because he wanted to hit an hour and a half? And again, that is not a slight on, what do I know? I don't make documentaries yet. I don't make documentaries, so that's not a slight on Jeremy Corbell's work. It's just I like the tone that this hits. I like the tone that Unidentified hits. I thought it was great. For me, it's a movie of three parts, where the first part of the film, almost the first half, I would say, is around the UFO legend and story of the 70 years from Roswell through the wars up to the 2000s. And I think it's probably the definitive piece on what's happened. Here's all the main stuff Betty and Barney Hill's touched on, and it gets everything in a very concise place. Is there anything new there? Not necessarily, but I think it's a great recap of everything that's came before. And that's something I've touched on quite a lot in the podcast recently. I feel that there's a time and place for that, and we need to move past it. And I think the documentary puts that in the way I would have kind of put that together in a film, that here's what's happened. Here's what we've been talking about for a long time. Here's what people know. Then I think it jumps to that kind of middle part, the second third of it, where it's very much now recent times, TTSA, Chris Mellon's heavily involved, a little bit of, you know, Elizondo. It touches on the Nimitz incidents, Princeton, a few more recent and ongoings within politics and governments and whatnot as well, and how the tone has changed in conversation. And then that last part, I think, which got a lot of people and surprised a lot of people, but a fantastic way to end it, because I suppose how do you end these things, is on the aerial school sighting, which takes you back to the 70s, but we'll get to that. So for me, I loved the flow of it, and I thought it was a really good way to have a bit of a surprise ending to touch on that as a case. And it's really got people talking. And what I think frustrated some was, as they may have said, the lack of any new information. They were expecting, here's some new footage you've never seen before, which I think there are some nuggets in there. I think it's really harsh to say there's nothing new when there is. For me, this is what you show people now.
New stuff. It's just, I guess, maybe subtle. Because I think when people are part of this community, you forget what people outside of it don't know.
Yes.
You know, and this kind of wrestled. I mean, I can't even fathom taking all of the UFO history and choosing stuff to put in a film to convince people, let alone putting the time in to get all the stuff to be able to put that together. Like, wow. And to do it in such a serious manner. Like I said, all the time James put into this is really, really on show. And he got a few real, real treats in terms of new stuff, I thought.
And there's no doubt stuff within that. And I know you were talking before we recorded it about some of the chat rooms you've been in as part of James's interviews recently as well. And he's been very forthcoming in his answers and the questions that have been asked. And as we go on, you can touch on that if you want to. But there was no doubt quite a lot left on the cutting room floor, or even things that just it couldn't get in there. And as we said before, this is something that was meant to come out. I mean, it was mooted to have a, what, August, September release initially, and it was going to be theatrical. Right. Obviously, we had COVID and whatnot, but there was a lot more than COVID stopped this coming out when it was supposed to come out as well. It had a lot of pushback in the background as well from what we heard.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know if that was to do with, you know, the distributors would have said, we'll have it in the cinema for X number of weeks and then you'll release it. Whereas they changed to just, we're releasing it right away. So I don't know if it was issues with that or something else going on. But there's certainly, based on Lou Elizondo's reaction to the film, where he kind of fully endorsed it and said it says some things that he is unable to say. Based on that, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some other kind of pushback behind that.
Yeah. And something we touched on then, and it's something worth noting now, is this documentary, is this film for me and you and the UFO community? Yes, it is. Is the wider audience, though, what it's really aimed at? And I would say yes. This is, for me, like we said, or I said, it's the piece that you would now show someone. If someone sat down and went, Dan, I want you to show me, why are you interested in this UFO stuff? Like, what is it? You know, is it aliens coming from Mars and flying saucers and all that kind of stuff and people being abducted? You know, show me some good stuff. If they really wanted to sit and watch a serious piece, you could now, I feel, show them this. Watch this. This will tell you what you need to know. This is why I'm interested, why you should be interested. And some of the really serious people, like a Chris Mellon, like some of the senators, Marco Rubio's on there, and others that are heavily involved in this with your Harry Reid's on camera. And if they can just understand a little bit of context, this is huge. There's stuff in there, and I think to compare it to Unidentified Season 1, oh, but we've seen the Nimitz stuff. Yep, we know this. Yeah, of course we do, but we are already that 1% that are going to be interested in this. This is now put together for a much wider audience that I don't think it has reached yet, but I think it will down the line. So that was something I know a lot of people talked about, is this yet reached its correct platform, being for rent and being for purchase? What I'm getting at basically is, has this yet to find its big audience when it reaches Netflix, do you think?
I think this is going to be one of those that kind of sits in the background and simmers and finds new people every day. I've sent it to people that I never would have sent a UFO documentary to in my life. You know, I felt proud sharing this after I was like, for example, one of my friends, he won't mind saying his name, Dominic, he's very, very heavily into politics. He was a politics student in university. That's where his mind is. He's no time for UFOs and conspiracy theories. But this, he knew Harry Reid. So when he watched this documentary, for the past week, I've had a barrage of texts, just asking questions and asking for sources and things like that. And that interaction kind of spread in the film to somebody else, and then he'll go and kind of spread it to someone else, and it kind of, you know, exponentially grows from there. That's what this is going to do, I think. And that's why it was so great to see it on Fox.
So many people will cite Unacknowledged as being the UFO documentary on Netflix. Without question for me, this takes its place when it goes on there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not even up for debate.
No one that I remember cries on camera in this either, which is always good. And I don't think there was any money of thousands of dollars changed hands to be in it either. So that is also a huge positive, which is really, really good.
It makes it a much easier conversation, doesn't it, to kind of go, hey, look, there's Harry Reid talking about the piles of evidence that I haven't seen the light of day. Versus Stephen Greer showing an interdimensional Bijou being blurry in the background.
To Demi Lovato and Miley Cyrus,
yeah,
as she swings on her wrecking ball, now flying saucer.
Yeah, kind of, it's respectable. That's the word I'd say.
Yeah, and listen, Unacknowledged still has its
place, harsh,
absolutely.
But...
yeah, no, listen, but we're at the point now where we've, like, again, has been talked about recently, there's a lot more happening a lot quicker, and we're probably being spoiled now, and we're so desensitized to the UFO news because of social media that it's no longer months or even years before we get big bits of information. We're getting quite a lot on quite a regular basis. Again, enough that me and you can sit before we do this review and discuss the UFO news from the month and leave quite a lot out as well. So...
yeah, yeah.
that's where we're at, and that's what I feel. This, like you see, this piece of filmmaking, the documentary, is going to sit in the background and simmer. And I think once it finds its bigger platform, or for me, in a year or two, it's going to be very, very, very relevant. Not that it's not now, but right now it's, I think, one of those things that we can say we know it now, we've watched it now, and it's going to be used far, far better down the line. Again, once it gets that bigger audience, that'll be great. And hopefully Joe Rogan gets James Fox on to talk about it soon as well, which I think...
Yeah, that'd be really, really great.
The TTSA crew are due another appearance. Everyone always wants Tom DeLonge back on the show, don't they? After some of his previous appearances and controversies.
Yeah. One of my standouts of the past few years is George Knapp sticking up for Tom on Joe Rogan.
Yes.
That was a special moment.
I love George Knapp. George Knapp is George Knapp, even who has an appearance in the phenomenon as well. He's a great guy. He seems very nice, very knowledgeable. And I loved when he was on Coast to Coast quite recently with Jeremy Corbell, and he talked about how he could have broken the 2017 New York Times news first. And I've no doubt that's happened many times in his career, but he knew the greater good was to leave it to those guys. This isn't about George Knapp. This is about getting this news out there in the biggest way possible. So that's a sign of the man's integrity and his kind of respect and responsibilities within the community. So I'm a huge George Knapp fan as well.
Yeah, another sure. person speaks, I'm a huge fan of. The weight of what we've got as well.
Absolutely.
To see someone step back and go, you know what? I'm going to let the professionals take this. Like, George is a professional. He's done so much work in this. It could have helped him immensely, but
yes,
he did the right thing.
And someone, you talk about professionals that are really coming to the forefront with all of this. One, Christopher Mellon. And his quote for me was probably the big standout of this. And again, when TTSA first came about, and this is how they have changed and evolved. If people don't want to see this and want to go with their government disinformation, PSYOPs, all that nonsense, which it is, they have evolved their message as time has gone on. And I've no doubt this is deliberate as well. Chris Mellon is quoted, or I'm going to paraphrase briefly here within the podcast, that life is the norm. So he's basically saying not the exception, and we are not alone in the universe. That's your former...
He's blunt.
Yeah, that's it. It's your former Undersecretary of Defence for the United States. And like Chase Klutzke said recently, another guest I've had on, Chris Mellon is not in this for the money. The TTSA share issue does not raise the kind of money that Chris Mellon did not already have in several bank accounts, probably. And that's not me going into Chris Mellon's finances, but his family are extremely wealthy and extremely powerful already. That can go off on a load of other tangents and conspiracy theories too. But Chris Mellon is not doing TTSA, neither is Lou Elizondo or Tom DeLonge, for the money. They were okay for money, folks. Trust me. And obviously I'm leaving out Justice, Halputov, etc. as well, okay? Jim Semivan, but they're all part of that too. But the main guys are the ones we always talk about. But there you
go. And we really see in this film as well Mellon's involvement in getting those videos out to us.
Yeah,
I'm not sure many people kind of saw those details. I think Danny Silver covered it a little while back, but, you know, again, not many people know. So to hear it kind of, you know, explained like the plot of a spy movie, I think we've said it before, but it's going to make an amazing film when all this is done.
Mellon getting the videos in the CD underground car park. I think of The Simpsons, you know, when Smithers is in the dark and Homer puts on the headlights. Yeah. Ah, well, you might as well give me a lift. But yeah, so then he's getting the videos. The and like you said, he's still got them, doesn't he? Like, I've still got the original tape. So who that shadowy figure was, we don't know. Some say it's the person who still is involved within it now, within the task force. So, you know, was it Lou Elizondo himself that met him in a car park and handed over the tapes in the dark? It could be anyone, but Chris Mellon got these out there for the greater good, or he's covering up for someone else and doesn't want them to get the flack for it. Who knows? But regardless, the video has made the light of day because in part, a huge part to Chris Mellon's efforts. He is basically coming out and saying, we are not alone in the universe. What he means by that yet, is it alien beings coming from different planets? Is it crypto-terrestrial, ultra-terrestrial, multidimensional, interdimensional, whatever? It's not just us. That's the main thing. Whatever comes of all this, and regardless what people might think and what your theory is, Dan, what my theory is, what anyone else's theory is, Chris Mellon, if you've got 10 people on the planet who know what they're talking about throughout the world, he's probably one of those 10. Might not know it all, as we kind of hear from everyone that no one knows this fully yet or understands it fully, but they know we aren't alone. And for me, that's huge.
No one understands it. I mean, fully is the key word there. But there was a really great moment in the film where, give me a second, I'm just going to scroll to this one. The ex-head of Blue Book, Colonel Robert Friend, there was a great moment in the film where James managed to get an incredible response out of him, where James said, so they closed Blue Book because they didn't know what it was, or because they did know what it was. And the smirk the Robert Friend gave James said everything, absolutely everything. So they know what these are. Someone knows, and it's right there in the middle of this film. And that's a new comment as well.
Yes, but can we still... God, this is going to get into do they know Inception, but... Do we know they know? I can't do the whole do we know they know. But does what they know mean they know fully? Or is it a case of, right, we have got a good idea. These beings are coming from another dimension into ours and going back out. Or is it something they knew at the time? Because when you start going back in with those reports, you're still going back, what, 40, 50 years? Yeah, so but I get that. So like you're saying, that there are people who know, I reckon they could pretty much sum up. And this is where I think if I could have 5 minutes with Lou Elizondo, then I got to wipe my mind, or a Chris Mellon, and go, right, okay, give me 10 bullet points of what this is, or even five, give me 5 bullet points. Okay, and I'd love to say it's interdimensional. Some of these beings come from another planet. They're on the planet with us already. Yes, we have their technology. We kind of know how to use it. Something like that, with a few more things that I've not even thought of. That's the kind of stuff I'm interested in, though. Tell me something.
I have the feeling that he would have you say things, and then he would just nod or shake his head. That would be the conversation. You wouldn't get it laid out like that.
I could totally deal with that. But yeah, so for me, that was a big quote, is Chris Mellon. And obviously you're talking about Robert Friend there. Was there any other quotes that kind of stood out to you?
Yes. In a word. Quotes from various people, actually. Not even necessarily officials, but from a number of cases throughout the film where James managed to add new information just through interviewing people. So, for example, there was the science teacher. I think this was Westall. Yeah, Westall. Where the science teacher backed up the kids, and he hadn't come forward before. And he didn't want to speak out at the time because he didn't want to be associated with it. So that's yet another adult kind of back in the story, and someone that it would have been said didn't back the story that the kids were telling. We then had the quote from, I forget her surname, Judy Trudy, it is a good name. She was the headmistress at the school at the time that the sighting happened, at the aerial sighting. And when James went to film, they went to film just some kind of B-roll around the school. And she came running out, and she asked to do that interview. And during a Q&A this week on Alejandro Rojas's Open Mind channel with James, we asked him how much of the story did the head teacher confirm. And I recommend go and watch the response, but everything, basically. So this is a headmistress confirming that the school was visited that day.
Yeah. Before we get to listener questions, where we'll touch on a few other points as well, that last part of the film, as is worth talking, the aerial school incident, where basically school children in the middle of the day in South Africa were witness to what, well, as one of the witnesses says themselves, one of the kids ran out in the classroom and said there's a UFO or a flying saucer outside, and they ran out and there was this craft over the tree line, and they basically ran towards, and one of the kids said they were basically a couple of feet from an alien being. And I think it really is quite a creepy tone, and it's the most kind of, not scary as such, I wouldn't say scary, but there's quite an almost sinister and really unsettling vibe to, or way they draw the beings and how they start to talk about them. And it's not, and as much as the message they all say, and I don't want to give too much away how they talk about it and what the beings say through the children, but...
Well, we can say there's like an environmental tilt.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
We'll leave it vague like that.
Uh-huh. But it's still quite unnerving the way I felt it came across, and the kids, as much as they said they weren't necessarily scared, it wasn't like a fun experience by the sounds of it. And I'm sure it all affected them in different ways as well, but just the way they draw the beings, the big eyes, the big head, and it's the stereotypical almost like grey type being, isn't it, that they've encountered. But this happens en masse in the middle of the day, hundreds of children. The teachers saw it as well, and something again they bring round is some of the adults from the time who are now much older admitting on camera, and one of the listeners mentioned that accountability ladder, that they're now coming out and saying, do you know what, at the time I denied this, we were told to deny it, the military, the authorities told us that it pulled all the kids in the assembly hall and told them not to talk about it, and that they're ashamed of it, they feel guilty about that now because they saw it too, they saw the craft, yeah, they saw the being, the incident happened. And there's just something to that whole, the purity of the interviews of the children at the time discussing what they saw, and that these, and you can't say that children don't lie, because as a parent would know, children do lie. All these children, though, haven't got together and made up this incident, all in different classrooms, different age groups, different groups of friends. The teachers saw it, they all saw it, this did happen. That for me is why they finished on this, and James Fox does a really good job of making this well-known incident even more relevant now. And what I loved was that they got some of the main children who were interviewed as children back then, who are obviously now adults, to sit in a group again, draw the beings, discuss their memories, recount what happened, and bring it up again. And this is still something that's profoundly touched them all, and something that's played a part in their lives in different ways. Some of them haven't really talked about it since. Some of them have wanted to move on. And something you mentioned, Dan, in your notes that you sent me, was that they all have different backgrounds now as well, but very
humanitarian lawyers, you know, all towards helping others, which I thought was really interesting given what the visitors said to them, or well said, you know, the message they shared with them, I guess.
Yeah. Famous incident, made even more relevant, I would say now, if not more famous at the moment. But then when you've got someone like Lou Elizondo who has watched this, or a Chris Mellon who's put his name to it, and these people who are in the know are going, yes, this is what happened. This is the message. This is what they're discussing. It really does lend a lot of credence to certain theories, of which...
It does.
Environment's important, these beings potentially share our planet with us, some of them do anyway, some of them have different interests, and you could talk for hours about why children in general. I know the aerial school incident itself is meant to have its own documentary coming out in the near future. There is a group on Twitter you can follow, I think it's an aerial phenomenon, or
yeah, I think it is. It's been coming for a while.
I've tried to get in touch.
It'll come out with the Rendlesham one, maybe.
Yeah, I've tried to get in touch with them to get some people involved on the podcast, and we'll see if that can happen in the future as well to discuss that. But I definitely feel that would merit its own documentary if again we can get those people who were involved directly involved within that. It would definitely have its place as opposed to just another recounting of what happened. Some listener questions, though, Dan, that will bring up some other topics as well.
Just just before you do that,
yeah,
just going to correct. I said the headmistress's name was Judy Trudy, which was wrong.
Oh, no.
My brain was filling in gaps with rhymes. It's Judy Bates.
Ah, that's less interesting. Far less interesting. So a couple of listener questions that were sent in as well. Your thoughts on the meta materials being tested, and I purposely never brought this up, and I know it's something you were very interested in as well, by Jacques Vallée and Gary Nolan. Will the results see the light of day? What was the source? Is Vallée paying for the tests or someone else? For this community, although the movie was excellent, it was a history lesson, but ideal for newbies. That was John that we both know, Welsh John, well.
For sure.
Your thoughts on the Jacques Vallée stuff? I know that's something you were particularly interested in.
Yeah, it's been really interesting hearing questions being asked of James in interviews over the past few weeks. I know John was instrumental in helping Dave Special Access podcast, which I highly recommend everyone go listen to, putting together the kind of line of questioning. And he got some really great details out of James there. But yeah, the meta materials stuff is amazing. We're potentially looking at a massive bomb right there.
We don't mean that they've got an actual bomb.
No, just to be
knowledge.
I'm sure they could just make one if they wanted to. They seem capable.
It could be highly explosive. We don't know.
Very true. But that was filmed early 2019, and obviously Gary Nolan's been involved with COVID stuff at the request of the White House, which is pretty damn cool. It speaks to his credibility. So to have him involved in this is absolutely amazing. It's a pet project of theirs, I know that. So any money kind of being spent on it is entirely their own. Everything will be shared for peer review as well. I get the feeling from all these interviews that that's going to happen sooner rather than later. And when I say that, I don't know whether it's going to be people coming back in peer review to them, or whether it's going to be put out for peer review. We could be at different bits in that process, but I would say the impression I get is that most of their work has been finished. I think it's really good that they've got results separate to TTSA as well, because, well, in science, the more experiments done on the same thing in isolation, proving the same thing, the better, right?
Yeah, I think what's important though as well, and I think these guys know this too, is there is a very, very small section of even the UFO community that are interested in hearing further that bismuth and magnesium samples are layered in such a way that it would have to be created somewhere else, because that only goes so far. What people, I think, want to see is, if possible, a working example of how this material is special. And what I think of in my head is in a lab, putting in some sort of charge through one of these metals and having it float off of a petri dish. I'm not saying that's entirely possible, but I think that's what people are sort of getting at now, where it's like when TTSA talk about almost understanding anti-gravitational technology. Okay, if you're saying, which they are, that this stuff is from the exhaust or a crash or as a product of some sort of UAP, then people want to see some sort of working example of that, or how you've managed to use this and replicate it in a way that it has a unique property that can be demonstrated, not just on a bit of paper. I think that would be important. And as much as I would appreciate them coming out and saying that, I could see why a lot of the UFO community and others would want to see something a little bit more tangible as well.
I guess that's why it might not be, you know, the smoking gun in terms of proving all this, just the results on paper.
Yeah.
Some people will understand that, some people won't. Gary Nolan did say in the film that he wanted to kind of use the properties of the materials and the methods used to construct them, because Vallée did say they were, you know, manufactured. Then that would give you something to that effect, right? Where they could show you a material and go, this is what's so special about it.
Yeah.
You can fold it up and it looks like foil and it goes back to normal.
Another point John brought up, and it was one I was going to as well anyway, Harry Reid is very open in this movie, about as open as he has ever been. And I think that's really interesting, given only a few months ago we had the well-publicised hype of the second New York Times article that never quite arrived as we expected, or as some had hyped. Sorry, Joe, UFO Joe out there, as much as we love you. And all the publicity that surrounded that and what happened, Harry Reid famously retracted some comments or really wanted to almost clear up that he didn't have the views that we'd all been led to believe he had. However, seems to have really won us all back round within his appearance in The Phenomenon, where he very much comes out and without saying the exact words of, yeah, there's a lot of evidence of UFOs and aliens that you just haven't seen the light, hasn't seen the light of day. That's what he's basically getting at, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's Uncle Harry again for us.
There's a lot of follow-up on that, apparently, to his office. And he's been answering a lot of inquiries from mainstream journalists asking, did you really say this? Is that kind of really what you meant? And James said that he's been great in responding to every single one of them saying, yep. And in terms of the difference from that last article, the New York Times one, the only thing I've been able to think is that Harry Reid was prepared for the conversation now, as opposed to maybe sounding like he didn't expect it that time.
Yeah, and it maybe got his back up a little bit off the back of all the hype from last time. It wasn't just Joe, but it caused a lot of debate and arguments online and right or wrong. And I suppose what's worth dropping in there actually is Chris Mellon himself is quoted as saying in this documentary that from the first Bombshell article, he didn't like the way the New York Times handled it. And I thought that was a really interesting nugget that came out of this that we've not really had a lot of follow-up on, if I'm not mistaken, that what was it he really didn't like? I know, was there a lot missing? Or I suppose the detail around that, what were your thoughts on what Chris Mellon said about the New York Times?
Mellon was, he did say that he was disappointed with that story. I was shocked as well, because we haven't really heard him say that before.
No.
But he, if I remember rightly, he says that they didn't emphasize the urgency. And that's something that we spoke about earlier with regard to if a sighting had happened last week as opposed to 16 years ago, then the urgency would be very, very different. That front page would have said, you know, they're here, as opposed to this happened 15 years ago.
And that's it, yeah. Sorry. And I suppose when it's brought out from someone like Chris Mellon in that way, it was reported as this incident happened. So from Chris Mellon's point of view, I can see where they wanted this to highlight that these things are happening and still happening, like we discussed, these incidents are ongoing. And that's where the controversial threat narrative comes in as well, that pilots' lives are at risk potentially from these, not that they're being attacked, but you know, something could happen in midair. We don't know, and that's a problem. It's the unknown aspect of it, isn't it? Or I suppose that one of these pilots panics and does shoot off something they shouldn't, and that's always a potential worry. But yeah, so I can see
that we want to respond to something that one of them does and we can't, because I mean, nukes have been disarmed.
Yes, well, unless,
yeah, that was the other big quote there from Reid, wasn't it?
Yeah. Although other people online recently have denied that's what was said, and that it was just more to do with glitches and technical hiccups and errors that are going on in these silos as unidentified aerial craft fly above. And yeah,
can we get for this show, can we get a few radio sounds so that when you tell me things that people have been saying that you know, just codswallop, I can press a sound that kind of goes boing.
Yeah.
You know,
coming 2021, when I start to update the show a little bit more, we'll have some sound effects put in as well.
Yeah,
we'll get one of those stream desks in front of us. If only I always say, but if only people could see the setup that we actually have and record off of, Dan, I think it would change their perceptions totally, wouldn't it?
It's not that I mean to be rude about it. Just there are certain parts of this conversation that we should have moved past now, and that's
ridiculous.
One of them,
yeah,
you know? It's absurd to me.
Absolutely ridiculous, yeah. Some of the other questions that came in, do you think there is room for a sequel? And what would the proper focus be of any sequel?
Ooh, that's a good question. the end of this film is the first time that James has touched on CE3, which is stuff with beings, basically.
Yeah.
So I would guess that it would follow up on that. It's a tricky subject, though. James has kind of rightly specified that it's, you know, we've got to take baby steps with this subject. And to go from there's something in our sky, we don't know what it is, and we want to investigate it, to these, you know, insane, and I don't mean the people, I mean the event itself, insane happenings where people are abducted and implanted and, you know, impregnated and things like that. It's a big step.
It's the bridge, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you bridge the conversation? Because you're then going at it from a point of view of a second documentary has either these are what these beings are, again, interplanetary, multidimensional, et cetera, or is it a case of here is what they may be and here are cases, and then it goes into conjecture territory again, doesn't it, of they might be this, they might be that. But then it would really depend on, do you have Chris Mellon talking about it, Lou Elizondo, Jacques Vallée, and those types of characters. Again, former astronauts, you've got Gordon Cooper, and the like as well on there too. Again, I would like to see, you know, Tim Peake or Chris Hadfield on there. Not something they normally talk about, I know. But again, you know, I would love to see recent astronauts coming out and discussing any potential experiences or sightings, which are far more unlikely. I get why other astronauts do it decades after the incidents or whatever's happened as well. But with commercial spaceflight coming up, this is something I always talk about with anyone, that one of the reasons I think maybe so much is happening now, if you've got Virgin Galactic and SpaceX and all these multi-billionaires wanting to send commercial space flights up or people into the atmosphere, surely you're going to get your Kanye Wests and Britney Spears and why am I just naming awful pop stars? Any kind of celebrity or rich star from Russia is going to potentially start seeing things when they're up there. And yeah, that's the point where the game's a bogey, because that's it. It's done.
We've all got iPhones. We've all got a high-definition camera. Like, you know, if that starts happening and we're filming tic-tacs out the window next to the planes,
yeah,
the ball game's changed.
That's it. So once you start putting people commercially into space and into orbit and into atmospheres, like you say, it's there's so much or so little control any potential shadowy organizations could have over that, that we would have to be having more of an open conversation. So maybe that ties in a little bit as well. That's just something I've thought about a few times. Dan, this question from It's Redacted is very much going to be for you. Because the first question, while jokey, was actually one that is close to your heart. Was the cinematography beautiful or extremely beautiful?
Astoundingly beautiful, I'm going to say. It was really moody, high contrast. It looked like, I don't know if you watch a lot of, you know, Netflix murder documentaries and stuff like that.
I've seen bits. Like that is, I'm not else. Massive into the crime genre, but yeah, I know the tone. Yeah,
the cinematography really kind of showed the weight of what the subject that we're dealing with. It captured it super, super well. I really liked the use of expansive shots when we were kind of opening up in new locations. I thought that was really cool. Made it look very cinematic. And it's funny you mentioned Corbell earlier, actually, because something I like about Corbell's work is that he showed that you could bring a really high production value to this subject.
That I agree with.
You know, in a very artsy way.
I absolutely agree, Jerry McCorbell. And if this didn't come across before, Jeremy Corbell's stuff is extremely high production value. I can appreciate it looks fantastic. It's just all the added stuff I could do without, you know, long shots of the desert and whatnot. But
yeah, I get you. It's kind of like the art film compared to this really serious presentation of it.
And on that as well, what were your thoughts on the music choice in the film? We've touched on the tone, but what about the music itself?
I like the music. Christopher Hoag, if I'm saying that right, was the composer. He captured the mystery really nicely. There was one bit towards the end of the film where it was really nice, actually. Stanton Friedman's name came up as a dedication.
Yeah, that was nice.
And when it happens, there's like this really low rumbling tone. I don't know if you heard it in headphones. I've watched the film so many times now. This is the kind of stuff that is standing out to me. But there's like this really low rumbling tone that I think in the cinema would have really kind of, people would have felt it in their seats, you know, and kind of noted like, oh, who's Stanton Freeman? That felt important at that moment. But I found a fun fact about Christopher Hoag. He scored the very first episode of House with Hugh Laurie. I didn't know.
Nice. I like that. I like a fun fact. Another couple of questions before we wrap up. This question was asked right at the time it came out, and we were lucky we saw screeners of the movie itself anyway, but still went on to purchase the film anyway to obviously show support. And listen, nothing against how personally anyone is choosing to watch this. If you've not paid for it but managed to watch anyway, it's a really difficult time for a lot of people financially, so that's totally understandable. This question though, is it worth buying or would you rent this at later on when it comes out? Do you think people are overly excited about it? A lot of people are overly excited about the movie and what it means for Disclosure. Is that a valid sentiment? I'll let you come in on that one first, Dan.
I think for anyone in the community, it's worth buying because we're going to be showing it to people over and over again and lending it to people and stuff like that. You know, I'm going to get my money's worth out of this big time. If you're new to the subject, I'd say rent it. It'd be a shame you're missing the extra features. But the main thing is that you watch the film, you understand the subject, you understand the history, and then you kind of have that call to action at the end. I think that's the important part there.
Yeah, I would agree. For me, it's definitely, you know, it's worth a couple of pounds, euros, dollars, whatever your currency may be, whatever you are, if you can afford that to watch it now and support James and what they have done and whatever may come in the future as well. For me, it's got to get onto Netflix though at some point or Amazon Prime. It's got to get onto those sorts of networks, and I'd love like a TV network internationally to pick it up as well and show it to the masses as much as possible at a decent time slot, not a 1 a.m. death time slot or, you know, whatever they might be when it comes to Nielsen ratings and whatnot in the US. I know a lot about those through my fandom of wrestling through the years, right? But again, getting this out there however possible for people to see is going to be really, really important, I think. And what it means for Disclosure, I don't think it's played its part yet in Disclosure. I think right now it's got out there to most of the audience that we're going to watch anyway, and like Dan says, it's slowly sizzling away in the background. It's something that I think still to have its big moment, whether COVID has changed that or not, or changed the time frame for that, I don't know, but I think this is still something that's got its big relevance to come down the line.
The way I look at it is that COVID might have negatively affected the film in some ways, but in other ways we all are now with armed up our copies of the films. Our friends are sat home with nothing to do because they're all under, you know, lockdown and various things like that. So send it over.
That's it. And again, if you've watched it and if you want someone to talk about with it, tag myself at UFOUAPAM, tag Dan at Zignal, you know, speak to everyone, hashtag it, make sure you're tagging Phenomenon Movie. If you're on Facebook, you know, you're joining the Facebook pages. James Fox has been really vocal. Tell him what you think of it. Review it as well. That's really important. Leave your thoughts on this because that's how we can get the conversation kept
if
going.
You fancy joining in with research as well, in the film, one of the new things that came up was a memo about Battelle, the company who ran a scientific study kind of concurrently with Blue Book. There is details available in documents, in a lot of different documents about that. And we need people to be looking over them. A number of us are trying. I'd recommend get in touch with John at I Want to Know 2020 on Twitter, and he'd start you off. But everyone's kind of starting to look into Battelle, and you can be a part of that if you want to. So come join us, please.
Awesome. And the last thing I'll touch on, at your thoughts, Dan, at the very end of the documentary, Peter Coyote says, "We may be sharing this blue green oasis with an unknown other," emphasis on sharing. This more and more is coming to the forefront that we are not alone on the planet. And I know I've used Black Panther, Wakanda as a very loose analogy in the past, but it seems that whether it's a different frequency, dimension, reality, or more openly that we have another humankind, as Lou Elizondo has mentioned before, humankinds on this planet with us, literally walking amongst us. What are your thoughts on that being the end of the documentary?
It's interesting that that's the kind of mic drop moment, especially because this film had to be run past every single person in it and cleared. So when you watch this film, if you haven't seen it yet, when that last moment kind of hits and you see how amazing that last case is, bear in mind that all of those officials that you've just seen talking about these really weighty subjects had to see it and sign off on it and say, yep, I'm fine with being associated with that landing and interaction and telepathy at that school. I forgot where I was going.
No. I did actually have one other question. Scott, who is new to the Patreon, again, you can sign up to patreon.com/thatufopodcast, got in touch, and he wanted to know, do you think prominent individuals in the UFO field who aren't pushing the phenomenon movie on their social platforms are exposing themselves as being in it for their own interests and their own material rather than the ultimate goal of truth and disclosure? I'll answer that one first. I'll go for that one, Dan, because I always keep throwing it to you to give you time to think of an answer to. I think there is an aspect of probably professional jealousy in there. As we have gone about ad nauseum on this podcast, James Fox has done an incredible job with the phenomenon, what it means to a lot of different people and what potentially it could mean in the future. So I've got no doubt there are people who make these sorts of movies and documentaries who are just a little bit peeved it wasn't them that done this. I think then again, there are others out there. You've got at the minute Dr. Greer, again, hitting the headlines for the wrong reasons, that he has a new witness who is coming out to discuss potential or more recent crash retrieval, and it's behind a paywall. However, then it's came out today that potentially, and that's through, this is through Michael Mazzola, who I interviewed a couple of months ago at The Karening on Twitter, who directed Unacknowledged. He's came out and said, actually, no, it's going to be free when it releases properly, but it's just not been advertised that well. That to me stinks a little bit of a massive backlash against Dr. Greer and trying to charge for something that really should be free. And you know what? I've got no issues with anyone, especially in the current climate or doing what we do, trying to make a couple of dollars or pounds or whatever for themselves or for production costs or whatever it is they do, in the sense that it's an early access for someone or for a few days, here's a show. I mean, I do it on this show as well with some of the content, but within a few days or at most a week, all the content goes on as being free, because otherwise it is just a money-making ploy, especially when it comes to this is a really important piece of information. If, Dan, it was me and you talking about our thoughts on Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, that's nothing to do, and that's a bit of, me and Dan were talking about that before we recorded, okay? But if it's us discussing something that's purely entertainment-based or our thoughts on UFO movies, you know, and it's nothing to do with disclosure, no sharing our opinions or thoughts on interviews or context or theories, then okay, yeah, hide that behind a paywall if you want to. But when it comes to giving people content that's going to help shape or mold an opinion or get a message out there, then that should be free. Do you agree with that? Yeah.
Yeah. I you know, put it bluntly and say this is possibly the most important development since we crawled out of the water onto land. And any information you have that can legally, because no one's going to be violating any oaths, security oaths there or clearances or anything like that. If you have information, you can share it. It's your responsibility too. Have you not seen Spider-Man? That's what I would say.
Yes. And like you say, the most important thing to happen since we crawled out, you know, you don't know that someone didn't put us on the land already fully formed and were part of some big experiment, you know, petting zoo. That's just, you know, Dan's theory and, you know, evolution.
You just want to touch my hair. I'm not a petting zoo.
Yeah, and again, there's all sorts of theories out there, folks, but yeah, for me, that's a really good question as well from Scott. And you've got to be liking, sharing, reviewing, talking about. And do you know what? Don't feel you have to go all mushy and lovey. And if you think there was something missing from the phenomenon, which I'll share in a moment, because what I'm going to do to wrap up is ask Dan his overall score out of 10 and his thoughts and feelings on the phenomenon a few weeks after release, and I'll give mine as well. But yeah, be honest. If there was something you felt was missing, then feed that back. If you felt there was something you really wanted to see, feed that back. But if you do want to kind of pour your heart out and tell James Fox how much you loved it, get on every review site you can and leave your thoughts. It's really, really important. Dan, in summarizing, what were your thoughts then on the phenomenon, and what would you give it out of 10?
I'm going to give it an 11 out of 10.
I'm shocked.
Because, you know, that's my usual, and Spinal Tap rocked. It showed to me that there is a very concise, clear history that you could prove in a courtroom to do with this cover-up and with this visitation that we're experiencing. It proved to me that a lot of people know, be it officials, commercial airline pilots, so on and so forth. And no one's jumped out of a window. No one's in the street screaming. So it's about time we got this done in the right way. And that this information came out. And I think this documentary is a really, really powerful way to kind of slap newcomers across the face and show them what they've been missing.
So you're going with an 11 out of 10, yeah?
11 out of 10, yeah.
Awesome. That very much reminds me of every Skinwalker review that
and unidentified
done,
where, as well.
And unidentified, where this episode was your favorite and the next episode was your favorite. I think only happened once that it wasn't. So for me, I'm going to go 9.2. If I had to be like round up to 9.5, what was missing for me is it's probably a little unfair, but is just that new piece of footage that would have, for me, that would have made it a 10. So I don't think anything else
is that your expectation, though?
Yes,
as opposed to,
yes,
you know,
if I'm reviewing it objectively, it's about as close to perfect. But again, I think there's enough people would say if they could have got just a little something like, I'm not saying the extended Nimitz or gimbal footage, which we know is out there, I just mean here's another clip or something more recent, that for me would have just topped it off. But again, it's borderline perfect. For me, it's head and shoulders above anything else that's been put out there. It is the new standard bearer. I don't think we'll get anything better for a long, long time, if ever, on the subject. Especially for me, it almost makes the point of there is now no point in another documentary coming along and covering anything from 2017 or before. This has covered it off so nicely without new information coming out. So for me, yeah, it's a 9 at least, 9.5 out of 10. Incredible job, well worth the wait. Definitely go out and support, buy, like, share, review. That's really, really important. Incredible bit of documentary making.
I'd love James to make, you know, imagine he took a decade per hour long and kind of used his material to do 10 episodes of since, you know, time immemorial to tell the story. I think that'd be really cool. But it'd be a proper UFO nerd thing, you know. It would be for us.
Yeah, and maybe that will come down the line. Folks, thank you very much for listening to myself and Dan share our thoughts on the phenomenon. Hopefully it's been well worth waiting on. Again, thank you all for listening to the podcast over the last almost 6 months, or 6 months if you're listening to this a little bit more in the future, and the UFO news roundup beforehand as well. Dan, thank you for joining me tonight.
Thank you. Just as a final thing, one of James's favorite moments that he had to cut from the film was a sighting in Virginia, Brazil. I'd recommend having a look at that. I just wanted to kind of leave you with that because it's a very, very cool sighting. Not really a sighting, more
I will leave it on that note as well. Again, folks, thank you very much. Keep looking out on the Twitter at UFOUAPAM for future episodes. Some really cool content coming out to round up the year, and a few specials too. And just on that, later on this week or next week, you should see online some of the previous episodes where we finish off with the quick fire rounds. Some have gone a few minutes, some have gone almost half an hour. I'm going to be condensing those into some specials and compilations to release over the next week or two for you to kind of put together and listen to all in a winner. So some really interesting stuff on there. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's at UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a Tic Tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little grass. Meditated game of fateful on meta. I can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. And I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should seek therapy. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.